Hello, and welcome to the Alchemy of Art podcast with your host, Addie Hirschton. Join us as we share folk tales and true stories about artists and the creative process.
The quote of the day. This was said by Henri Matisse. Only what I created after my illness constitutes my real self, free and liberated. Hello, everyone. My name is Addie Hirschton. I'm a contemporary impressionist painter, teacher with the Indianapolis Art Center, author, and public speaker. The purpose of this podcast is to share stories about art and artists that will inspire you and help you to move forward. Today's podcast features an interview with the artist Jessica Green. Over the next few months, I will be interviewing artists and art teachers that I think will be inspiring. For those of you who love the art stories that I've been sharing on this podcast, don't worry. There will continue to be an art story at the end of every podcast. Now, without further ado, here is my interview with Jessica Green. So Jessica Green is a member of Daily Paintworks, who creates stunning landscapes and still life paintings in oils. After teaching art education in a public school setting for 7 years, she now runs her own business teaching art camps and classes for children in the Indianapolis area. You can find out more about her art classes at indieartventure.com, and her painting website is jessicagreenartwork.com. I met Jessica Green this past spring at a plein air paint out gathering that was in Hamilton County near where we both live in Indianapolis. Jessica ran up to me after the closing ceremony to introduce herself, and I'm so glad she did because now I have a fabulous, fun-loving painting buddy to go out on adventures with. So welcome, Jessica Green.
Yay. Thanks, Addie. Thanks for letting me do this. I'm excited.
Oh, very good. Very good. Well, I'm excited to hear how you're going to answer our interview questions. So we'll get rolling with the first question. And that is, what is the story of how you became an artist?
Okay. Yeah. Well, I actually kind of stumbled upon becoming an artist through teaching. As I entered college, I had a good indication that I wanted to teach, and I wasn't sure what. I'm actually a fourth generation teacher, and it just always seemed like something that was just in my blood. I was wired to do and seemed naturally good at teaching. I hadn't taken many art classes in high school, but as I entered college, I thought, well, I just think it would be fun to be an elementary art teacher. And so declaring art education as my major did seem a little bit of a gamble, and I felt pretty self-conscious. Just as people discovered I was art education, they were quick to say, oh, well, you're an artist, and, you know, what kind of work do you do? And, you know, I was very quick to correct and say, no, I'm not an artist. I'm a teacher. I want to be a teacher, and I just happen to be kind of artsy-craftsy, and okay. So I was always kind of defensive about the title artist, and I think I felt insecure as well with entering the art department in college, feeling like perhaps I didn't belong there, but yet had a desire to teach. And you probably heard the best way to really learn something is to teach it. And think as I stepped into becoming an art teacher, which turned out to be my dream job, so that was a great gamble. I think just teaching students about the elements and the principles of art, seeing the kids just discover the joy in the process and also being so proud of their product, you know, that I felt like it was an incubator for me to love and want to pursue my own work. So like you said, I worked for about 7 years in public schools, and I just really thrived. there just in my profession. In 2011, I got laid off. The school where I was working was having budget cuts and kind of a similar story across the nation, but cuts, to art and music. And so I was finding myself kind of in an employment change and wanted to continue teaching. I had two kids at the time, a baby and a toddler. And but yet I see it seemed like an open clearing to finally, I guess, shed that self-consciousness about being labeled an artist. All my students thought, of course, I was one. And that's when I started really taking my art seriously. And so in 2013 is when I started my goal of painting 500 paintings. And that's when I also launched my blog. And that chronicles my journey and my process along the way. So I guess in the past couple of years, I can finally say I'm an artist, but there's still sometimes a
Definitely.
twinge of like, I don't know, am I? But it's been a joy. And it's been a joy. And I think teaching will always be probably my first love, but maybe it will be, it's always been in tandem, but
Interesting.
that's,
So, what number are you on with the 500 painting goal?
That's a good question. I'm in like the 250s,
Okay.
so which is exciting to finally be over the halfway point.
Yeah,
So,
okay.
yeah, it's been incredible.
Have there been any where you ended up saying, "I this is not going to be one of the 500, and I'm going to chuck this one"?
Right. That's the tricky part because at the beginning I'd promised, my viewers, which at first was, my mom, and my husband. It's really grown and that's been exciting. But from the get-go, it was all about people watching and cheering me on and seeing the flub-ups along the way. But there, I have to be honest, there have been a few that I'm like, I'm just gonna pretend that never happened. But I've tried to be as true as I can and put some up that I'm not really proud of.
The good, the
But
bad, and the
luckily
ugly.
those are getting more few and far between. But yeah.
This is so interesting what you said about being hesitant to embrace the title artist. Because
Right.
I did the same thing, although I was not going into art education. I was becoming an art major in college, and I had no goals to become an art teacher at that time.
Right, so you couldn't
But
hide behind the teaching thing like I
no, I couldn't hide
did.
behind that label either. But I
Right.
still hesitated to label myself as an artist because it felt like, I don't know, I had to pay my dues for longer or something, and I don't even know what happened, but at some point I became comfortable and was able to embrace the term.
Right, that is so interesting too. And maybe there's even personality implications. I don't know, when people say artist, there's maybe so many assumptions of what that would mean, or I don't know. It's just, yeah, that's interesting.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I read something by Carita Kent,
Okay.
and she said that everyone is an artist. And sorry, I can't quote it exactly. Maybe I'll quote it in the next
Right.
podcast. But she said that even if you're making a loaf of bread, you're being an artist because you're creating something. And I
Right.
love that
Right.
idea.
Yeah.
All
So
right.
good.
Yeah, so back to the interview questions. The next one is, what do you say most often to your students?
I'm always stressing personal best. I know there's always an element of competition, among students, really at any age, but really pushing the kids to be proud of their end product, for it to be their best. And then the other thing that I probably say even more often, and it's probably because of the age of students that I typically work with, which is elementary age, is to slow down. I say that all the time. So if you're in my classroom, you'd hear me say, art is not a race. Take your time. Slow down. I think for that age level, really kind of calming their motors down. And they're their work just increases, the quality increases dramatically if they can slow themselves down. But as I was thinking about this question, I think there's a little irony now just in the style of work that I'm doing right now in my own work. I'm really pushing myself to go faster. So it's a little bit ironic. Because I want my brushwork to be loose and fresh.
Yeah.
And I don't want it to look overworked.
And I think you got that.
So maybe, yeah. So, you know, maybe for younger kids, as they're just acquiring the basic skills, they naturally want to go fast and it's slowing them down. But then maybe when they get to a point, if I still have them, I might need to crack the whip and see if they'll join me in going a little faster than they're comfortable with, just to keep the work loose and to have a life to it. So
yeah, definitely. And it does strike me too, because I teach for adults and children, and they can have such different needs. They have such different needs, you know. We older folks, maybe we need to let go of being perfectionists and taking too much time. And then the younger folks need to really take their time to do it right. And it's just a completely opposite bit of advice.
Oh, that's so interesting. Yes.
Oh, funny.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So, and then my next question is, what advice would you give to your younger artist self?
Okay, this is a great question. I think I would say, just, you know, I'd say, Jessica, stop comparing yourself to others who you are labeling as, quote, real artists. You know, you are an artist. You know, stop analyzing and evaluating whether or not you meet the requirements of that title, you know. And then secondly, just get busy. Just start doing it, you know. And I think it's been so good for me to have a goal of 500. It's just been a thread that's pulling me through, instead of, you know, oh, I think I might paint today, or maybe I'll try to fit another painting in next week, you know. But to have an overarching goal, that's really helped pull me through, you know, the ruts of being motivated or not. But just the fact of stop thinking about it and just do it. Just kind of get on the bike and start pedaling, so to speak.
Yes.
So I'm glad I did when I did. And I think that was one of the motivations for starting, was seeing work in galleries and just feeling like there's something in me that I just know I can do that. And I think I would enjoy it. And thinking, okay, if I could picture myself at 60, you know, I don't want to be regretful, and I don't want to still be walking around the galleries thinking I could have done that. And not that 60 is too late, but you know what I mean?
To I know
think,
what you
mean. Mm-hmm. Ah, I really could have. It's like, I was just entering my 30s when I started my blog and the journey, and it was like, now's the time, you know. I'm an adult now. It's time to really pursue this if I'm gonna do it. And so now I'm glad I have. It's been great.
Very good. No regrets. I like to say I dive into the pool.
Right, exactly.
So, all right, for the last question, what is your favorite art book or story?
Okay. Well, my favorite art book is Carol Marine's new daily painting that she came out with. That was just hugely, just the whole Daily Paintworks movement, the daily painting movement, which is kind of fueled by Carol and other artists. That's really what inspired me choosing 500 as my goal. And it seemed doable. A stage of life of having young kids, of doing a small painting, even the size of like a 6x6 square or a 5x7, something so small that would take an hour or an hour and a half or 2 hours. And so I had really been following her blog for years, and some of her tutorials and things like that have been so helpful. But when she came out with her daily painting book just last year, it was a no-brainer. Like, I have to get it. And it really is it's a beautiful mix of, you know, instruction, just technically and practically, but then also just encouragement and motivation.
Yes.
And she also introduces, you know, artists that are her friends. And it's just so encouraging. I love her work. It's definitely something I aspire toward and motivates me. And yeah, I just love the idea of painting small, painting frequent,
Yes.
just as a means of growth. And so, yeah, she's huge for me. I'm a huge Carol fan. And so,
Yeah. Oh, cool. Very good. Very good. Did you? You know, one of the things Carol talks about in her book is how in art school she was required to work very large, and then the idea of working small was new to her. And I didn't really get that from my own art education, but I find it very challenging to work smaller, and I'm trying to do it more often. But does it, you are you comfortable with that format? Is that the format you had been doing before?
Right. No, I mean, I really hadn't been doing much. I think I was just motivated more by the promise of growth. I think the years before, I guess learning about the daily painting movement, I would, I don't know, do maybe medium size 9 by 12 or 11 by 14, which I know someone considers small, but now that I do really small, that seems like medium. But you know, I'd sit down and sometimes it would turn out great, other times it would be a flop, and it really I questioned myself and my talent, like, well, am I good at this or not? And it's like I couldn't figure out what were the variables that were making some things work and others not. And I think what really turned me on was just the promise of doing lots of small ones. It's like kindling to a fire, you know, it's just
Oh,
it is
yeah.
going to, you know, it just you skyrocket when you can do it. And it seems so you spend an hour or two on a little painting and it turns out horrible. Well, you've wasted an hour or two, you know. People do that all the time. You know, it's like watching a bad movie. You just chuck it in the trash and you move on. And it's not like you've spent a lot of money on a big canvas or a lot of paint or a lot of time. It's like, well, you learn something and then, you know, you still have time to do another one that day if you're not burnt out, or tomorrow's a new day and a new little painting. But I remember ordering my little 6 by 6 canvases the first time and getting them in the mail, and I'm like, these are like coasters, like they're so small. So it did seem really funny. But now I'm totally used to it. But I'm trying to go a little bit bigger. So I'm kind of all over the map with size, but I think I have an affection for the smalls. Maybe just 'cause I like Carol so much, and yeah.
We feel the
So
love.
yeah, we feel the love. She doesn't even know me, but I'm a huge fan.
That's great. Wonderful. Well,
Yeah.
Jessica, thank you so very much for being my first interview on the Alchemy of Art
Yeah.
podcast. And again, everyone, Jessica's website is jessicagreenartwork.com. And I'll have a link in the podcast description for you. Again, thank you, Jessica. Thank you. Thank you a million
Thank you,
times
Addie.
over.
It's been a pleasure. Thanks. Let's paint again soon.
We will. We will.
Okay.
Hooray. All right. The quotation by Karida Kent that I was trying to remember during the interview was this: "The root meaning of art is to fit together. And we all do this every day. Not all of us are painters, but we are all artists. Each time we fit things together, we are creating, whether it is to make a loaf of bread, a child, or a day." And now for today's story. Matisse's Second Life is a true story that can be found in my book, The Alchemy of Art: Stories for the Classroom. Henri Matisse was a respected French painter known for his bright, vivid colors. In 1941, he had surgery for cancer that weakened his body. It caused him to need to use a wheelchair. He was unable to stand at his easel to paint. Matisse sent a letter to his ex-wife to make peace with her. He set his projects to rest, thinking that the end of his life was near. But then an extraordinary thing happened. Matisse's energy renewed. He switched from painting to creating cut paper collages. He made many colorful, dynamic designs of all different shapes and sizes. He had the cut pieces put on a wall to rearrange them over and over again until he finalized the design and had it glued to a backing. He illustrated and wrote a book called Jazz about improvisational jazz music and being at one with the audience. Matisse called this time period of renewal une seconde vie, a second life. He lived for another 14 years and produced an exciting body of work that became even more famous than his original paintings. And to repeat the quote of the day, he said, "Only what I created after my illness constitutes my real self, free and liberated." My thoughts on this story. The end of one time period means the beginning of another. Always look for new ways to express yourself, even if your former instrument has been taken away. It may turn out to be even better a fit for you than the one you had before. In my own life, when I was a kid, I learned how to play the piano, and I got pretty good at it. I could, you know, play certain pieces with my eyes closed, but I had to struggle pretty darn hard to get to that point with every piece. And later in my life, I found when I picked up the violin came just a lot more easily to me. And it reminds me of Matisse's second life with his cut paper collages. It just was a better fit of an instrument for me. So if what you happen to be working on is a struggle, maybe you just need to hunt out a new art form. This story and many others can be found in my book, The Alchemy of Art: Stories for the Classroom. It's a collection of 50 folk tales and true stories for art educators to share aloud with their students. Many of the stories shared on this podcast can be found in the book, along with the recommended resources and lesson planned ideas. If you love this podcast and want to see it continue, support us by going to my website, www.azirfineart.com, to make a donation on the podcast page. Thanks, everyone. May these stories about art and the creative process inspire you. May you find your voice.
You have been listening to the Alchemy of Art podcast. To find out more about Addie Hirshton and her work, go to azirfineart.com. That's azirfineart.com.